Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another show. Here we are once again, the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander in studio with me for tonight's first hour. It's Saturday evening, May 14th, and we are here at AM 1380 WLRM Studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. We're not flooded. We're not underwater. We're here. And we are glad that you're here with us as we simulcast online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. And, of course, we're going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network as well. Got a great show for you tonight. Our featured guest is coming up in tonight's third and final hour. It's going to be Jared Taylor, editor of American Renaissance. And he's going to be discussing his brand new book, that is being met with much critical acclaim and fanfare, Jared Taylor, tonight during the third hour, still forthcoming. But before then, we've got a lot to talk about. And Keith, why don't you tell the audience why we're in such a particularly good mood, at least for this moment. Tell everybody what we were doing during the few minutes leading into tonight's intro.
We were checking out each other's favorite golden oldies, or not really our favorite, but we just got on kind of a stream. I was telling him about the Poppy family that you weren't aware of, and also the Marmalade, Reflections of My Life, and you were showing me, tell him what you were showing me.
Well, we were looking up Edison Lighthouse, a song originally written for the Grassroots, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. We were spending a little time in the late 60s and early 70s, yes, the Flying Machine, Smile a Little Smile for Me, Rosemary. Look, these are the greatest songs. They can't make music like this today if they tried. And anyway, we were just sitting here a few minutes before show time, and we just started following the breadcrumb trail on YouTube, and that's what was going on here just about 2 minutes ago. And I'm glad we did it, because I wasn't in the best of moods when I came into the studio tonight, as Keith is my witness. I have in front of me here at my desk here in the studio a list of my monthly bills, and Keith can verify that it's pretty long, pretty extensive. And this is what we're going to be talking about at the top of tonight's show. To open things up this evening, I'm going to be griping for you a little bit, and I think bringing to your attention issues that you probably all can relate to all too well. But here I am, all right? I'm a middle-class guy. I got a wife, a young daughter. I'm 30 years old, trying to make it. And I'm saddled with all kinds of bills that I heartily accept because, you know, I want to play by the rules. I want to provide for my family. I want to work hard and earn that living. I don't begrudge the fact that I have to pay these bills, but I'll get to the point. I'll get to the point in just a minute that I do have a little bit of issue with. But here we go. This is just very basic. I have a house note. I pay homeowner's insurance. I have a car note. I pay car insurance. We pay our DirecTV bill. We have to pay for the internet. We have utility bills, water bill. I have my health insurance, my daughter and wife's health insurance, groceries, gas, all the other incidentals that you run into each month. And these are bills that have to be paid every single month, mind you. And then, of course, all the costs associated with keeping this radio program on the air, which thankfully our loyal and faithful listening audience helps us with that. But nevertheless, each and every month, all these bills are due, and I had better pay them. Now, that being said, I have had a health insurance policy, personal health insurance policy, for a couple of years. I never get sick. I'm healthy as a horse. But once, back in January of this year, now I pay $300 a month in insurance.
For myself
and my daughter, $300 a month. And we pay that whether we're sick or not, and normally we're not. I haven't gone to the doctor in years, except for back in January, my wife found a very small, suspicious-looking growth on my back. It had changed colors, and so I went to a dermatologist. They swiped it off. They did the pathology on it. No big deal. Nothing was wrong. And of course, I filed that as a claim with my insurance company. That's what I pay them for, to take care of me when I need them. Well, like I said, we got the lab results back. There wasn't anything there. It was all well and good. The total cost of the bill was just a few hundred dollars, which as far as doctor's offices go, doctor visits, is pretty cheap. Well, I went in there and I paid my copay, as you know, we all have to do, and then trusted my insurance company would take care of the rest. Well, the insurance company did, in fact, approve the claim. They didn't dismiss it. They said this was a legitimate claim. They were going to pay for it. And how much did they pay? Keeping in mind that I pay $300 a month to them when I'm healthy, I go in and have a very small bill, and they say they are liable to pay $20 worth of what was, I think, about an $800 bill. $20. I pay them $300 a month. I go in, have a small procedure, total cost $800. They pay $20, and guess what? Even after I pay all these bills, even after I pay them $300 a month to be healthy, I get stuck with basically $780 worth of an $800 bill. That's health insurance for you. And listen, I don't have some jackleg health insurance company, folks, some cut-rate health insurance. I have one of the biggest and best, or, you know, most reputable, I should say, in Tennessee. So that being said, once again, playing by the rules, trying to do things by the book, and this is what I'm faced with. I'm sure everyone has a story very similar to that which I just relayed to you. Keith, tell them why I'm upset.
James and I think it was last weekend before the show, we're driving around the car, running some family errands, and we just got on this jag and started talking about it, and James said this would be a great topic for a show sometime in the future. I said, well, you tell me when you want to use it. See, this is my, you know, bread and butter. I do this all the time. I deal with insurance companies as a lawyer, and I can tell you what's going on here. You know, you can have insurance, car insurance, health insurance for 20 years. You pay a monthly premium of $300 or whatever. You better not be a day late or a dollar short with those payments. Well, what are you paying for? Or are you just making a burnt offering to some pagan god or something once a month, you know, getting $300 and lighting a match to it? No, what you're doing is you're in a contract, and a contract has, you know, I give you something, you give me something. What the insurance company is supposed to give you in return for that $300 a month is that if you have their promise that if you have a claim, they'll pay it promptly and fairly. But what James has found out is that insurance companies now rarely, if ever, pay claims promptly and fairly. Basically, when you buy insurance, all you've bought is someone to sue over a bill that they're going to strain at gnats to try to deny. That happens time and time again. This is what is so frustrating to people. And, of course, they can get a legislature, for example, to make you buy insurance, like for your car, then the service really goes down because you're a captive audience then. This is the way of the world. You know, back when I was a kid, back in the 50s and 60s, hardly anybody had insurance like this. And now we see what has happened when more and more people have it. And we'll get back to this after this break.
We're just getting started, folks. We're going to continue to explore this and make some pretty salient points, I hope, right after these words. Stay tuned.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. As we kick things off this evening, Keith and I were having a little bit of a porch talk with you, our members of the listening audience, and basically I was going through a list of bills that I have. It's probably very similar to the list of bills that each and every one of you have. And I am not complaining over the fact that, you know, we have these bills. I pay a house note because I like living and a home. You know, I'd rather have a home than an apartment, and I'd rather live by myself than with family members. So, you know, I bought a house. I pay DirecTV because, you know, I like watching TV from time to time. I pay the utility bill because it's pretty nice to have lights and all that stuff. I pay insurance because if I get sick, I would like to have medical care as part of the way this system is constructed, so on and so forth. That's not what I'm complaining about. I'm not complaining over the cost of health insurance. I don't mind paying the money as long as I get in return that which is promised to me. I believe that we should pay to have health insurance. You know the deal. You pay to take it out, and if you pay for that as part of the privilege, you get taken care of to an extent on the back end. And I know there's deductibles and all that other stuff. But, you know, and if you choose not to take out health insurance, then don't complain if and when you get sick. But the problem is for those of us, and like I said, I have a little piddly claim compared to people who have suffered far worse. I'm not giving you a woe is me thing. But what I'm saying is, here I am trying to do things by the rules. I'm paying into the health insurance companies, and I expect them to live up to their end of the bargain. In the meantime, and we're not making this up, you know, we live in a welfare state. You've got minorities who don't work. They don't pay for their own groceries. You know, they don't pay for their housing in some cases, and they certainly don't pay for health insurance, yet they can go in, you know, for, let's just say, they drink themselves nearly to death and then they have to get on dialysis. Well, no big deal. That's taken care of by the state. And don't think that I haven't seen it. I have had family members work as paramedics and in the health care industry. And listen, they know, you know, you've got people without health insurance going in for dialysis treatments three times a week for the course of their lives. And they can be on dialysis for years with end-stage renal disease. And that's all taken care of by the taxpayers, by people like me, by people like Keith. But yet when it comes time for us to be taken care of, even though we're paying into the system, it's not guaranteed whatsoever. Now that, there is something wrong with that. And I know I'm not saying anything that we don't already know, but the fact of the matter is, sometimes on this radio program, you know, we talk about a lot of issues. Let's talk about an issue here that everybody has to deal with. This is a very common issue.
Yeah, let's get down to the nitty-gritty, as they used to say in the 60s. This is where we all live. James is paying $300 a month. He has a once-in-a-blue-moon $800 medical bill, and his insurance company approves it and says that their entire exposure on this is $20. Don't spend it all in one place. So, you know, how can they lose with that type of deal? In the meantime, we have people that are totally improvident, live recklessly, drink too much, take too much drugs, eat themselves into 500-pound morbidly obese behemoths. They get diabetes. And I can tell you this, from living in Memphis is like a canary in the coal mine. The reason we talk about Memphis so much is that Memphis is unique. There are a lot more minority group members in Memphis than there are in the average locality. And what happens in Memphis is what's going to happen to you as this demographic change that's been predicted gradually starts occurring in America. In Memphis, we have renal clinics, dialysis centers, all over the black part of town. These are expensive places. Like James said, one blood cleansing, and some of these people have them as often as three times a week, costs $20,000. The taxpayers are picking up that tab. People are opening these dialysis clinics. It's like a little cottage industry out there. And all of these people that are grossly overweight, have otherwise lived recklessly and have, you know, develop diabetes and other chronic diseases and suffer kidney failure or liver failure. These are the people that are getting $20,000, $60,000 a week of medical care, totally free of charge. In fact, the government pays another group of people to run these healthcare shuttle services I know you had a relative one time that worked for one of those, and he went all through West Tennessee picking up these people in these, you know, isolated hamlets and whatnot, taking them to these renal centers, sometimes having to get three or four people to load these morbidly obese people into the ambulance. And meanwhile, the people that actually are paying for their insurance are getting the shaft. Now, how did this come to be? I can tell you this. When I was a kid back in the 50s and 60s, before health insurance was widespread, it became an employee benefit, you know, for employment-related health insurance. Back then, everybody had to pay doctors out of their own pocket. And as a result, doctors had to, and hospitals had to charge people amounts they could afford to pay. I remember when I went to the pediatrician as a little boy with my mother, she would pay $5 for a regular office visit. She would pay $10 if I got a shot. She'd reach in her purse, either write a check or give him some U.S. Treasury bills, and that was it. And back then, doctors weren't the richest cats in the town as they are today. Back then, if you want to see what it was like, look at one of these old TV cable channels like TV Land or Good Times TV, and watch some of these sitcoms from the late 50s and early 60s, like The Donna Reed Show. In The Donna Reed Show, Donna Reed's husband was a pediatrician. He had his clinic in one downstairs room of their typical suburban two-story home. The family drove one station wagon and sent their kids to public school. Now, that's not what you think of when you think of a doctor today. When you think of a doctor today, you're thinking of a guy driving a Mercedes, his wife is driving a Land Rover or a BMW, the kids are in BMWs or something similar. They're going to the most expensive private school in town, and they have at least $500,000 starter home. He probably has a multi-million dollar home. Now, what's happened to doctors between 1959, when the Donna Reed Show was being broadcast, and today? Well, what's happened is the advent of health insurance and the advent of liberalism. Insurance allowed doctors to start charging people more than they could afford for health care. And as they did that, they got addicted to insurance just like a junkie gets addicted to drugs. They holler and shout now if there's any attempt to cut back. Well, the insurance companies are fighting back, and they're leaving people like James and other policyholders holding the bag. The doctors are still charging exorbitant amounts for their treatment, but unlike in the past, it's not covered by insurance, or very little of it is covered by insurance. And you never see an insurance company hardly ever paying out more than what you're getting premiums paid, unless you have a really serious illness, and then they won't renew it. It's really a game, and it's a scheme, and the responsible people are the ones left holding the bag.
Well, Keith, I appreciate your commentary and your support. It's been very therapeutic these first 22 segments. We didn't even get into taxes. You know, we all got to pay all these bills, and that's before or after, I should say, the government takes 35-40% of everything we make so we can, you know, pay for the welfare state. Anyway, folks, we're going to get onto some other topics, but just something to think about here. We're paying for our own dispossession, and we'll be right back.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this
place. If it's the last thing we ever do. All right, everybody. James Edwards back with you here on the Political Cesspool radio program. I appreciate everyone indulging me long enough to have a little venting session there, those first two segments. But as I said, and as I know, this is something that hits close to home for each and every member of my listening audience. What can we say that we haven't already said? And I don't want to dwell on it too long, but it's something that, you know, we need to be vocal about these things. Keith is here with me tonight. as he always is for the first hour. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, that coming up during tonight's third hour, we're going to have Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance Magazine, on to promote his newest book. We're very excited about that and looking forward to that. And it's coming up, well, more quickly than you might imagine. But before then, Keith has a couple of other things on the agenda for tonight's first hour. So I'll turn it over to him to explore those thoughts.
James, let me do a little wrap up on the insurance issue that we were talking about earlier. It's ironic that in America today, healthcare takes up a larger percentage of the GNP in America than in any other first world nation or any other nation, period. America pays 17% of its GNP for healthcare. Healthcare is an industry. It used to be what was called an eleemosynary institution. Our ancestors would have thought a for-profit hospital to be as outrageous as we would think a for-profit orphanage would be. But now they are profit-making entities. And they're profit-making entities, one, because of liberalism. We insist on giving people that need the most health care and have the least ability to pay Cadillac health care. Meanwhile, paying members of the middle class are they're getting the soft end of the stick. We get inferior care. We pay exorbitant rates for inadequate insurance, which is intentionally inadequate, and we have to pay higher and higher, ever higher taxes to support the medical welfare state. Hospitals, clinics, these renal centers like we were talking about, and doctors are all now, this is one of the most profitable areas. You know, if you're a young person and you start looking at the literature, you're being encouraged to go into nursing or some type of paramedical field because that's where the dough is. Of course, none of that's productive. None of that is really contributing to the gross national product of the United States, but it's where you make the money. Now, in the old days, as usual, our ancestors had it right. We didn't just let people die on the sidewalks, but we had a charity hospital, for example, here in Memphis called John Gaston Hospital, and it gave basic care, hospitalization. If you had a broken bone, they'd set it. If you had torn ligaments, they would repair them. But it was not the level one trauma center that we have in Memphis now that treats all the poorest people. Meanwhile, middle class people go to a level three hospital, which doesn't provide nearly as much care, and the costs aren't nearly as expensive. We have the ironic situation in America today of the poorest people getting the most expensive care, and the people that can pay for care are getting inferior care. And this is what we found to be so, you know, absolutely astounding when you sit back, you know, and step back to see the forest rather than the individual trees in it, as James was talking about. And his example is just, you know, the perfect example that every one of us has about how we've been ripped off by the insurance company. Another thing that's really surprising is how credulous people are. The Republicans have everybody believing that lawyers are the bad guys and insurance companies are the good guys. It's actually 180 degrees the different way. If it wasn't for lawyers, you couldn't challenge them to, and they could run roughshod over you. They already run roughshod enough, and the reason they do is because of this initiative that always comes up whenever you get a Republican governor elected in your state called tort reform, trying to make it more difficult to hold insurance companies' feet to the fire. Now, enough said on that topic. James, let's talk a little bit about the topics that we were talking about last week and put a wrap on those. We talked about the Jubilee Schools in Memphis. Again, Memphis is a canary in the coal mine. What the Jubilee Schools are is they're old Catholic schools that have been abandoned by the Catholic Church and are not operating because all of the Catholics, i.e. white people, Catholics tend to be white people, have moved out of the neighborhood. and they've been replaced by, at least in Memphis, typically black people who aren't Catholics and aren't about to pay for private school education. Well, what they've done is they've reopened these schools, turned them into private schools, with providing a Catholic school education to black kids for free. Now, I don't really begrudge them using the schools. What's wrong with it then? Well, what's wrong with it is this. Operations like the Jubilee Schools suck up all the charity money for education in your community. For example, I talked about how the East Memphis Rotary Club Scholarship Fund, which was originally set up to provide scholarships for the children and grandchildren of Rotary Club members who tend to be white, has now been totally commandeered to support things like the Jubilee School. Same thing for a group called the Children's Foundation. And what that does, it leaves white kids who need help going to private school, need help going to college, without any refuge or resource. We're basically paying to provide a private school education to equip black kids so they can dispossess your children and grandchildren in the race for jobs in the future. And we're gladly going along with this because it is fashionable. Apparently, among elites and among high-class people, nothing is more fashionable than basically looking with, you know, undisguised scorn on white people one rung down the social ladder from you and having an undying, a limitless wellspring of benevolence towards minority kids, black, Hispanic, or whatever. And that's where all the money goes. Now, Memphis is not unusual. A lot of communities have suffered from white flight. And as a result, there are a lot of former Catholic schools that are empty. And the Roman Catholic Church in the United States has said that the Jubilee School program in Memphis is a model that they want to follow nationwide. So the Jubilee Schools or some equivalent type of program is coming to your community soon at the behest of the rulers or the big shots in the Catholic Church. And that's going to mean that all the money in your community that could help your kids or relatives or white kids generally get an education is soon going to be gone. You know, all of this focus, we don't have this isn't one of those non-zero-sum games. Charitable money is a zero-sum game. And if it's all being sucked to help one group, if it's being sucked into a pool to help blacks, what unfortunately happens is that there's nothing there for whites. You name me one charity of any size that provides help, scholarships, money, a school system for white kids. On the other hand, you look at every charity and almost all of them are focused on helping black kids. For example, the Bill Gates Millennial Scholarships are available to a list of people, if you'll look at their website. Conspicuously missing in that list are whites. White kids are basically at the bottom of the heap. This is, they're without refuge or resource, just like James was saying about the insurance. This is the best of all times to be black in America, and the worst of all times to be a white person who's either poor or working class. There's nothing for you out there. There's no help. If you don't have family members or if you don't have some type of rich uncle or a church that will help you, you're without any help whatsoever because it's all being sucked over into this liberal outreach.
Keith Alexander laying it out as no other radio program will do for you. We're going to take another commercial break, and when we come back, another great segment. So don't go anywhere. The Political Cesspool returns tonight on the Liberty News Radio Network right after these words from our sponsors.
The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta
place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Little preview for the remainder of tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, as you know, and I'm not going to let you forget, Jared Taylor is our guest coming up in the third hour, but there is an hour in between the first and third, and during that second hour, which is coming up right around the corner, we're going to be talking about a variety of subjects, including the black student that we wrote about at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, who lied about the school police and the university summarily blamed the police. It's a very interesting story. I'll break it down for you. A couple of Muslim clerics were booted off a flight here in Memphis, and now they're going to cash in on that. A disturbing new TV show. We can't even mention it on the radio. You're going to have to go to the website to find out the name of it. Good Christian Female Dogs. That'll be your hint. And that's coming up. Barack Obama's coming to Memphis, and we want to interview him. We're going to be talking about all that. You think he's going to come on, Keith?
Somehow I doubt it. I think there's not a snowball chance that's going to happen. Now, we have not mentioned anything about Brown versus Board of Education thus far this month, and the anniversary of that momentous decision is May the 17th. In other words, in a couple of days, I think it's Tuesday, is when the anniversary is. Every year, we focus on Brown versus Board of Education. In fact, we're going to focus a lot of the remainder of this month in the first hour of this show talking about Brown. Now, why is Brown so important that it requires that type of in-depth look each and every year? Well, Brown was probably the most important judicial decision ever in the history of the United States of America. It wrought upon American society cataclysmic change for the worse, not for the better. We have this folklore about it that it supposedly just opened up a new world of peace, love, and understanding. It's done just the opposite. It's basically put American public education into the toilet. Now, the Civil War required the loss of 620,000 lives among soldiers and probably another 80,000 in civilians to accomplish the type of change that was done in Brown with the stroke of a pen. Keep that thought in mind. We're not going to go into a lot of depth right now, but next week we're going to really be hitting hard on Brown versus Board of Education, James.
Well, that's a preview for what's coming up next week. One of the darkest days in America was that day in May back in 1954. Black Monday, for more reasons than one. In 1954, the Brown versus Board of Education decision really paved the way and set the precedent for many, many horrific multicultural American legislating from the bench actions. You see where I'm going with that, of course. That really set the precedent for legislating from the bench to really pare it down. And we're going to be talking about that, exploring it in depth, as we do every year on this show next week, a very big special on the Brown versus Board of Education decision and what it meant for me and you. Now, if you go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, you will see that I have posted an article entitled A Quick Word About the NBA Lockout. Of course, the NFL is already locked out. The owners have locked out their players. The NBA is going to be locking out their players as soon as the season, their playoffs end in June. And I'm looking at this, and you've got basically the owners in these sports leagues, who are all white, of course, and they made their livings before they got in. They made their fortunes before they got into sports. Basically, most of these owners just buy their professional franchise as a hobby. You know, one example that I provided was Paul Allen of the Portland Trailblazers. What did he do before he bought the basketball club? Well, all he did was co-found Microsoft with Bill Gates. And you've got Senator Herb Kohl of the Kohl's merchandising chain. He's the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, each and every example of an owner in professional sports, you will have an example of someone who made their money, a successful businessman. Now, compare and contrast that with the players who, in most cases, are still thugs. But if it weren't for the lavish contracts afforded to them by these clubs, they would most certainly not be able to make it. And most of them would either be in jail or living a life of crime, just waiting to be caught. Now, the example of this that we give is Derrick Rose. Now, he's not a garden variety criminal or a petty thief or thug like most of the people in the NBA, but one of the things he's most famous for, and he's the NBA MVP this season, most valuable player. The thing, he was the rookie of the year before that, the thing he was most well known for was having someone else take his SAT so he could get into the University of Memphis and play under John Calipari, which was, of course, his springboard to the pros. So he's not a criminal. He's just a cheater. Couldn't even get into college, you know, based upon his own merits. But now here he is, you know, making tens of millions of dollars. The average salary for an NBA player is $5.85 million per year. $5.85 million per year, and it's not enough. So here on one hand, you've got the owners who are millionaires, billionaires in some cases. They don't need sports. They made their money. They're going to make money no matter what. And then you take these players like Derrick Rose who can't even get to college, you know, based upon his own talents, and he's arguing, you know, and all of the players are arguing that, you know, the paltry $6 million a year they're making isn't enough, as if they would do better in the real world, Keith.
Yeah, I remember when Latrell Sprewell said that he couldn't feed his family on...
It was a $21 million three-year contract, and that wasn't enough for him to feed his family, so he said.
Must have an inordinately large family, like the other guy that you reported on who had 23 illegitimate children by 14 different women. But this picture of Derrick Rose, I want you to take a look at.
Looks like the cat that ate the canary.
Yeah, look at him here. He's grinning like a mule eating briars. He's got this jewel-encrusted wristwatch on, and this is before he was drafted. He was supposedly getting no money before this. Well, where did he get that jewel-encrusted watch? Of course, what this shows is that these athletes have totally corrupted college athletics. They won't do anything. They won't scratch themselves. They won't pick their nose unless they get paid. So consequently, they're going to find somebody that pays them. They get paid. He was a one-and-done character. He cheated, had somebody take his SAT for him. Meanwhile, the University of Memphis gets stripped of their banner for being number two in the NCAA tournament because they played this guy. The fans are disappointed, but this guy hasn't missed a step. And what's so incredible is that most of these athletes have no business at all being in college except on the south end of a northbound broom. Derrick Rose, for example, with the type of grades that he would really make if he were to take the ACT or the SAT on his own, next to playing in the NBA, his next best job option is probably riding shotgun on the neighborhood garbage truck. Now, these are the people that are thrown up to the youth of America as role models. They're role models for all of the wrong reasons. Role models for corruption, role models for cheating, role models for thuggery, role models for lust and adultery and promiscuity and everything else that you can imagine. I remember there was one player who will go nameless on a particular professional team who was doing the positions of the Kama Sutra with his girlfriend in the bed, and apparently they were getting a little too rambunctious. She fell out of the bed and broke her arm or something, and there was a big scandal about that. These are the people that are thrown up to us and to our children as role models. And you compare this, for example, with the sports of the SEC, for example, back in the days before integration, when you had people like Tommy Casanova, an All-American defensive back for the LSU, who is now an eye surgeon in Alexandria, Louisiana. You have all sorts of people like that. They were all big successes in life. They didn't depend on sports. They looked at playing for LSU or for Ole Miss or Tennessee or Georgia as being the high point of their life. These other the type of athletes we have today, they look at playing for LSU or University of Tennessee or Ohio State just like a professional baseball player looks at playing for the Memphis Redbirds. No kid grows up wanting to play for the Memphis Redbirds. He wants to play for the St. Louis Cardinals or the New York Yankees. These athletes that we have in NCAA Division I football and basketball nowadays just see those college teams as a triple-A stepping stone to go to their real goal in life, which is to get paid, what do you say, $8 million a year or $6 million a year to play basketball and to, live high on the hog.
Well, they should take whatever the owners decide to give them because they don't deserve that much. And what they're getting, I'm sure anybody in my listening audience would trade places with them. But it's not enough, and it never is, ladies and gentlemen. Appeasement never works. Got to take a break. We'll be back with the second hour right after this. You're listening to the Political Cesspool on Liberty News Radio Network.
Something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 80s.